Thanks, everybody, for coming. The title of this panel, as you can see in big orange letters, is The Promise and Pitfalls of Real-Time Marketing. And we've got a good group of people that have very different jobs up here on this panel. So we're going to go and each introduce ourselves quickly. We're going to save a lot of time at the end for questions. What we hope to do in the time with you is to share our stories, the good ones and some of the war stories, too. To tell you what we've learned along the way. So we'll each introduce ourselves. My name's Jeff Berenger. I lead the digital practice at Golin Harris and actually get to work with both Rick and Abby as clients of ours and have been working pretty closely with them to figure out how real-time marketing works inside of their companies.
I'm Rick Wyan. I'm the director of social media for McDonald's, and I sit within the communications team, and we're looking at how we can use real-time marketing to really fulfill our brand promise, which is, as you know, as a brand, we're all about simple, easy enjoyment, and our customers are talking about us all online to the tune of 2 million times per month, and so our customers are there. We want to be there with them in those conversations as well.
Hi, I'm Abby Planesky, and I'm with Dow.
Oh, is your mic dead?
Not sure.
Can you all hear Abby? No? Okay.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me? Nope. No. All right, let me borrow yours.
Here, Rick. Here, we'll move.
Good afternoon. Abby Klinesky, and I'm with Dow. I've been a brand marketer for about 12 years in three different continents, and excited to have new channels to explore at this stage. And I think I also sit within the communications team within our company now. I think what's most exciting to me about this topic is we're finally able to talk about the passionate people that exist inside of our company versus just our products. And I think that's a trap that a lot of B2B marketers fall into. So really excited to bring the people forward.
Hi, I'm Jim Dowd. I head up media strategy for Golin Harris. And I'm an entertainment guy and a traditional media guy at heart. And one of the perspectives that I'm going to bring to this real-time marketing topic is the importance of looking at it from a traditional media perspective alongside our counterparts in digital and social, and sort of the cross-pollinization of those two ways of thinking and how media travels through so many different channels from a traditional standpoint. So it'll be fun.
All right.
Thanks for joining.
So let's get after it. So what is real-time marketing? I think if you asked each of us, we'd probably have a slightly different definition. For purposes of our conversation today, we jotted down a few thoughts. Really, it's about communications that's delivered at the right place, at the right time, with the right message. And it's communications that is built around stimulus, things that people are seeing, they're talking about, maybe they're reading in the newspaper or even watching on television during the day. Those are opportunities for marketers to share their own stories and to tap into things that people are interested in. So it's very linked to that which is happening in the world around people. We say that it is planned. Real-time marketing can be planned. It's not all off the cuff, but it can't be overly choreographed. And we'll share some examples in our discussion in a few minutes, but this is a really important part of this. You can absolutely plan to do this inside your organizations. It's not something that happens off the cuff. And then the last piece of this, Jim alluded to, is a really important one. A lot of people think that real-time marketing is synonymous with social media marketing, and it's not. That's one part of it. But there are as many or more opportunities for us to take advantage of fleeting opportunities with traditional media, too, that oftentimes spur people to talk online as well. So looking at the two together is really important. So for what it's worth, that is our definition of real-time marketing. In terms of what does this look like in the real world, we just put together a quick example. I've seen a lot of these paper cups around Austin over the last couple days. Lots of coffee drinkers here, obviously. So imagine, for example, that you as a coffee drinker, one morning, maybe before work, you flip on the television, if you still watch television, and maybe you happen to see a segment on the Today Show about a new study. Coffee Grower Association has done a study about coffee, linking it to actually reduction in stress levels. So you see this spot, you see it, and you go on with your business. And maybe on the way to work or on the way home from work, you happen to tune in to the radio and you hear a celebrity who is talking about that same study, and that actually during the afternoon, that celebrity likes to drink coffee to actually relax. So that sticks in your head a little bit. And then in the afternoon, you end up getting an email. And a really sharp, nimble company decided that they wanted to take advantage of this study that came out today that maybe they didn't see coming. And they wanted to draft on that news a little bit. And they send you an email inviting you in the afternoon to enjoy a cup of coffee and to de-stress. So that's in a nutshell, a very simple example of real-time marketing at work. It's multi-channel, and it's built upon things that people are seeing in different aspects of their life at any given time. So what's the value of all this? In the lead-up to South By, we did a research study where we went out and asked a few thousand consumers about how their perceptions or behaviors related to brands might change when you introduce real-time marketing into the mix. And we looked at, you know, essentially how they react to brands that are marketing to them in a more static way, a more traditional way, and then how do those behaviors or perceptions change when you add real-time marketing into the mix. And we looked at several different categories and many different brands to sort of dissect what was going on and what the real impact of what this was. And then we also realized, you know, certainly real-time marketing doesn't happen in a vacuum. You have lots of other marketing activities happening for your brands. What, if any, impact does real-time marketing have on everything else you're doing, too? So we did this research in late February, and it was focused on U.S. consumers specifically, but we found out four things that I think were interesting. And then maybe you can take home and have a conversation with your boss about. The first one is that real-time marketing delivers what marketers seek most. If you look at the graphics on this slide, there are two numbers for each of these things. In each of these five categories, these are really the things that most of us get up in the morning and try to do for the brands that we represent. And we try to make people feel more positive about the brands or the products we represent, try to get people interested in them. And ultimately get people to consider them, buy them, and talk about them. And if you look at the differences before real-time marketing and after consumers are exposed to different types of real-time marketing, the difference is pretty dramatic. Look at consideration. It almost doubles. So for companies that aren't thinking about how to reach their customers in real-time today, this to us was pretty eye-opening. We thought it was important. But when we saw this data, it was pretty remarkable to us. And then you look at try and buy, move from 23% to 37%. And this is across any type of product. This was this is with respect to many different types of products in different categories. And even word of mouth is driven by this. So it absolutely helps deliver what clients or what brands want most. The second thing we found is that as we looked at the other types of activities that marketers have going already that they're investing in. Maybe you have a word-of-mouth marketing program. You're doing search advertising. Maybe you have an aggressive public relations campaign placing stories about your brand, or you're running television ads, for example, or you've invested in a great website, or you've lots of social media properties. Look at all of the different ways when you add real-time marketing to the mix, how these numbers go up, the likelihood that people will search for your brand online, likelihood that they'll connect with you in social media, the likelihood that they'll be more receptive to the story that maybe your PR firm placed or your ad agency put in a newspaper during the day. So it helps improve and make more effective the things that most of us are already doing outside of real-time marketing as well. The third thing that we learned was that the impact of this isn't just for certain kinds of products. We looked at brands in several different categories, and we looked at challenger brands, we looked at legacy brands, we looked at market leaders, and universally you saw an impact. Generally speaking, challenger brands can have the bigger impact from this because consumers don't necessarily expect it from them. So it's an opportunity for challenger brands to maybe get into the consideration set. For market leaders, the impact may not be as dramatic, but it's a way to keep loyal customers coming back. So you see, you know, for example, Rick's brand in here. Rick has McDonald's launched McCafe when?
3 years ago.
3 years ago. So this is still sort of an emerging product, you know, that's competing with legacy brands like Dunkin' Donuts that have been there for a long time and you know, arguably, sorry, Rick, market leaders like Starbucks. If you look at the impact that can be had by adding this to the mix for a new brand that McDonald's have been introducing, it can have a pretty big impact. And then finally, we wondered about the role that a brand itself has in making real-time communication work. And we looked at, when we asked the respondents from our research, if a company, any company, generically, did these kinds of things, what would your impact be? And we got 41% of those 10 different behaviors we looked at. 41% of people said they were likely to take part in one of those behaviors. When we added a specific brand to the mix, one that they knew, that those numbers went way up. So the finding for us, the implication for us when we looked at it was, we shouldn't be bashful in this communication. If you're going to invest in doing this kind of work, make sure that people know it's coming for you. People react more favorably when there's a very clearly identified brand in it. So anyway, these were some quick findings we found in our research. If you want this infographic and you have a meeting with your boss coming up, we've put it online at rtmresearch.info, and you can grab it there. And there are some other details on the research as well. So anyway, hopefully that gives you a little picture of the value of this in the marketing mix. And what I want to start to with our panel discussion is asking each of you, Rick is a consumer marketer, Abby is a B2B marketer, Jim is a guy that's working with lots of different clients in lots of different categories. What's the value of this in the business that you have, that you're in?
Well, for McDonald's, real-time marketing offers tons and tons of great opportunities for us. It really all starts around engaging with our customers as well. As I mentioned, we're getting 2 million mentions of McDonald's each month online. And so each one of those is an opportunity for us to not only engage with our customers, but be there for them. If they have an issue, we've got a customer service team on Twitter who answers them. When our fans are celebrating something, then we can be there to celebrate with them. Like right now, Shamrock Shakes are everywhere, and so people are really excited about Shamrock Shakes. We might have a contest going on where you can win a sweet t-shirt like this, take a picture of yourself with a Shamrock Shake. But our Shamrock Shake fans, they're really vocal. Same with our McRib fans, same with Fries fans. And real-time marketing lets us not only be out there and say, hey, that's cool, it's like giving them a virtual high five to say, we thank you for your customer, and we thank you for being a fan as well.
I think for us, I look at it in two different ways. There's the general public, and then there's our business customers. And so with the general public, we do very little advertising to the general public. We don't have the budget to do it. We don't necessarily even want the reach to everyone. It's just not something we've desired. But when people are naturally curious about different areas that we play in, that's a wonderful time for us to engage in that conversation. And so through a lot of what's been happening with real-time marketing, specifically through social media, people are out there asking us questions, asking questions that our scientists can answer. And so feeding that back into the organization and then having people ready to answer those questions has been tremendously valuable to us. So we're not looking for the reach, but we are looking for people who are very curious about what we do in general. You know, we've had a number of legacy issues over the years. And so we have people that, quite frankly, are not a huge fan of our company, but mostly it's out of a lack of understanding, and we've not done a good job explaining our very complex story. But it's easy to disarm someone who walks up to you with a phone and says, you know, I don't know, why should I talk to you? You're a chemical company. I don't even know why you're here. Well, let's talk a little bit about the fact that over 50% of the components in the phone that you're holding originate from something that we make. They start with chemistry. And that immediately disarms them, and it actually makes them just incredibly curious to hear more about what we do. From a business perspective, we also use real-time marketing to understand, you know, in many cases, we may only have a sales cycle once every 10 years, and we may have a three-month window to sell something in. And if we can shorten the cycle time of introducing a product to market by feeding our marketers with real-time information about who's influencing who, that's incredibly valuable and can leap us ahead of our competitors very quickly. Because we're not selling $1 products. We're trying to make one sale of a multi-$1 million product. So being able to reduce that sale time or that lead time to market is incredibly valuable to us.
From my perspective, real-time marketing changes the way we consume media, and it is so exciting in our New York office when we're looking for opportunities for our underdog brands. Jeff was mentioning in the research a lot of the third, fourth category leaders in brands look for opportunities where they can leap over the leaders, and if you're nimble and if you can seize on a news cycle and change what you're doing that very second, in the moment, then you're reacting to news and you're creating an opportunity for your client. You know, we have the fourth leading category in pet care, and President Obama and his wife announced the new food pyramid, you know, earlier this year, and we created a food pyramid for dogs, which was branded with this particular pet food brand, which got them all sorts of coverage above and beyond all of the competition. And that was because we thought, in real time, we saw something in the news cycle, we took it to the client, and we reacted within an hour on that particular opportunity. And it's in that moment and in the magic of thinking live that changes the way we do things. And you have to consume media and be ready to change your plan. I'll just finish with the whole notion of reacting to your media plans by the day is so important, because by a show of hands, how many people have had to change or modify their media plan because of something that happened in the news or because of something that derailed it? There you go. Something leaks out. You have that exclusive plan. I'm a traditional media guy, right? So we love to give exclusives to the Wall Street Journal. 3 weeks earlier, something leaked out on the streets of Paris. They saw one of our spokespeople. What happens that very second? Out goes the entire media plan that 5 years ago we were able to check off every single little box. It's gone. So thinking in the real, in the live, just brings a whole level of excitement and passion to what we're doing.
So each of you have talked about the value of this in terms of your business. You all believe this. How do you, inside of your own organizations, convince other people that need to feel the same way about the value of this?
Well, you really have to be an evangelist for the cause, and you need to get a couple good stories in a couple good wins. One that I use again and again and again is that we've got a customer service team on Twitter. And so one day they were monitoring Twitter and they saw a tweet from a mom who was upset because her son got the girl's toy, so the boy's toy in his Happy Meal. Which, I mean, that's not the end of the world unless you're a parent, and then you know that you can get really upset by that. So Katie reached out to her. She's right over there, in fact. And very simple. Said, hey, saw that. We're sorry about that. Sent her the toy in the mail so that she was happy. Well, this person was a mom blogger. In fact, one of the most widely read mom bloggers out there. She wrote a wonderful blog post about how McDonald's gets customer service and how they were able to turn an issue on its head in a very short amount of time. And then that story was then picked up by Josh Burnoff, which is now in the updated edition of Engage, Empowered. Sorry.
Groundswell.
Thank you. And so that story, I can tell it to executives across McDonald's, and they're like, oh, okay, well, I don't really – they may not use Twitter, but they understand the value of being able to see a customer who has an issue and then be able to fix that issue very, very quickly. And then that one-to-one interaction turns into a massive and a really good positive case study for us.
I'd love to say I have like an incredibly well-orchestrated and thought-through example, but ours was somewhat accidental. We actually have low expectations of ourselves from a marketing perspective most of the time. We had done a test launch of an advertising campaign that we're about to launch here in a few weeks. And this was last September. And we decided at the last minute, well, you know, these consumer marketers are doing things with QR codes. Let's just try and slap one on our print ad and see what happens. And we were expecting to get about 10,000 scans, sort of conversions, to our website from that QR code on our print ad that we were testing over the course of a quarter. We had 30,000 in a month, which for us was a huge deal. And not only that, I was able to actually feed back to our advertising team, who we have to be very efficient with our money. We don't have the budgets that a lot of B2C companies do for marketing. So I was able to feed back to them that of these 30,000, Time Magazine was the top converting publication. Imagine how valuable that was to them. They've had a lot of trouble measuring effectiveness across the board. And so this was one of the ways to bring the traditional folks to the table and make it about us, not sort of our team versus their team.
We see value every hour, honestly. In communicating to our clients, one of the major things they ask of us is insights and creative thinking every single day. And that's something that again, 5-6 years ago, there wasn't that sort of daily insight chain necessarily. And when you're looking at the news landscape, and at the end of the day, you can show sort of a scorecard of opportunities to your client, then they know that every single hour you're thinking of them. And in some cases, it's actually created an entirely different campaign message for us. So as we see something sparking in the news, it seems over and over again the issue of bullying is coming up. There's a million, there's 10 million children under 12 on Facebook, 1 million of whom are bullied on Facebook. And we took that message to one of our empowering femcare products, and that was something that never was hatched in a brainstorm, was never planned for. It was something that happened, you know, by the nature of consuming media and delivering an insight for our clients.
So we're going to talk a little bit about how each of these companies are using this in very practical ways, or what they're using it for in each of their organizations. Jim, since you were talking about insights, let's start there. Can you each share some examples of how participating in real time has helped you? Abby had a good example there from the ad campaign, but are there other examples of how you are learning about what your customers want, what they need, and how you can make even business decisions based on those insights?
Yeah, sure. So I'll take an example from the work we did with Dow. For years, we've been working with you guys on STEM education in the International Year of Chemistry. And one of the biggest successes last year was a Today Show segment celebrating the International Year of Chemistry. And it came about from, back to President Obama again, awarding the Teacher of the Year to a chemistry teacher, something that we saw in real time on TV, responded to, took it to the folks at Dow as a great insight, because it was parallel, matched perfectly to their campaign, took it to the Today Show, and it really helped secure that segment for us. Out of here an hour.
Sure.
Yeah. One of the really good example that just happened really the last couple of months is we work with autotrader.com, and they wanted to make a big impact during the Super Bowl. Go figure, who doesn't ask that? So to make the challenge worse, their number one competitor, Cars.com, was actually spending $3 million to advertise during the Super Bowl. So they said, all right, make a splash. It's the biggest category of ads is autos. There's got to be something out there for our spokespeople to comment on. So we all sat in a room, big idea wall, came up with ideas. And what we ended up being able to do, thanks to the folks at autotrader.com, is as the commercials were airing, by even like every 15 seconds of the air of the commercial, autotrader.com was able to track how many people went on the site with an inclination to buy that particular vehicle, which was different than anything anybody else was doing. Because you've got the rankings of the ads, you know, based on, you know, scores of from A to F, or you know, Google searches. What AutoTrader was able to do is say, okay, during this 30-second commercial, 5,000 people wanted to buy this Acura or buy this BMW. So we were able to issue at 11:30 that night an infographic showing the chart of these ads, and all of the media that were covering the impact of advertising saw us as the legitimate answer, because we were able to show who actually wanted to buy, not what was more popular or what have you. So that was a huge impact. Wall Street Journal did a piece, as you can see there. It was covered in the media, and their CEO was on CNBC Live from the Vegas Auto Show, and you didn't see Cars.com anywhere except for their $3 million ad, and this cost about $50,000.
From an insights, or I think product development is where we'd like to go. We'd love to be able to influence product development, but we're probably a couple years away from doing that. But where we are from a business insights standpoint is we're actually able now to sit down with our insights teams and our marketing teams and help them influence where they introduce products geographically and when. And just even sometimes tweaking it by a couple of weeks or a couple of months can have a huge impact on what we're trying to do, especially when you're trying to influence such a small crowd of people to make a very large sort of multi-million dollar decision. So that's been hugely impactful for us. And we use Radian 6 amongst other sort of tools to actually identify and better target where and when we should be getting out there with our marketing messages.
Yeah, and from our perspective, the insights that we get out of it are just tremendous as well. There's an infographic up there about McDonald's fries that was kind of a fun example of using the real-time marketing data. We saw just organically there was a trending topic one day, a top trend on Twitter one day about fast food addiction, and people were just chiming in what their favorite fast food was. And so we did, again, using Rating 6, we did a quick look and scan to see what people were talking about and what items. And we realized that more than 50% of the conversation was about McDonald's French fries. Not just French fries, but McDonald's French fries itself. And so we said, oh, that's pretty cool. And then worked with Golan to take that data, very quickly put it in an infographic, and then we posted that through the at McDonald's handle, and then that got pulled up into the stream of conversation about fast food addiction, where we could show people, hey, there's all kinds of great stuff out there, but we all know McDonald's fries are the best. The other data point that I think is important from the insights perspective and how we're using the insights from real-time marketing is that we're getting a much richer understanding of what our customers talk about in relation to our products. You know, we know that people talk a lot about McRib and Shamrock Shake and Oreo McFlurries because those just, they're very social and they have fans that get really excited about it. People don't talk as much about some of our other things on our menu, like salads. You know, we wish people would talk more about salads, but they don't. So as a marketer, that it's great data, but also leads me to a tough decision. Do I put my marketing budget behind those things that are the most social to amp it up that much more? Or do I do just the opposite and say, you know what, McRib fans are going to talk about McRib a lot. I don't need to amplify that. I want to save my dollars for the ones that need a bigger kick.
Your T-shirt doesn't say salad.
Yeah, Rick, what is shamrocking?
Shamrocking is, it's a new trend. Some are calling it the new T-bowing, the new planking, the new album. So take your picture with your shamrock shake. Rock with your shamrock.
So Rick, one of the things you mentioned is that how insights get shared, and I've always thought this is a bit interesting about McDonald's. The way they approach this is that we're talking about real-time marketing, literally promoting products, yet the way you guys are organized, you have many different people plugged into that process, like your research team. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, so our research team is plugged into it. And this is where our social media team, we're very much a matrix organization. I sit in communications, but I work with marketing. I work with customer insights, customer experience, customer satisfaction, legal teams. So, you know, we've got a broad mix of people there. And so what we're moving towards is taking that data that we're getting, that real-time data, those 2 million mentions a month, and saying, how do we plug that into our customer insights? So we can look beyond just, okay, here's what's happening right now in the stream, mm-hmm. into here's what's happening now, and then how can we make business decisions based on what's happening now, and how do we need to change plans mm-hmm. as things unfold?
So how are each of you using this? Every one of you here has a number of different properties that you have to fill with content online every day. McDonald's on Twitter, Facebook, so on, all these different properties. Dow the same way. You have chemists out there who are sharing content on behalf of your company, Abby. How do you use what you're learning from real-time marketing to help them create better content?
Really, I think what we've done so far is really in sharing the conversation with our marketers, they get to see a reflection on what is going well and what people are picking up on a lot, and then what people aren't picking up on, what's not really bouncing. And again, an example of that is the Egg McMuffin commercials that we had out early this year. You know, the Egg McMuffin of apartments, the Egg McMuffin of this and that. That took off really well. That, again, was something that became a trending topic that we weren't expecting. And so that gave us the very, wow, people are talking about this a lot. Maybe we should make some more commercials about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other question I would have on the media relations side, Jim, you were talking about how you can spot opportunities to work with traditional media influencers. Talk about kind of the symbiotic relationship between social media and traditional media. And I know you put the example in of Conan up here. Mm-hmm. Kind of talk about how that works together on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, so we've got our hands full, right? Because not only are we reading the newspaper, or some of us are reading the newspaper every morning, but we're probably reading it online the night before where the stories are posted, where each of our contacts are tweeting their story 2 hours before it's posted online, possibly posting it to Facebook, and I could go on with the ways that we can find these stories. Reality is, though, 99% of blogs link to traditional media. So this notion that traditional media is dead is absolutely not the case. We just have to come at it differently now. So we're constantly looking at reporters and how they live online. Twitter's the most obvious example, because oftentimes they're looking for ideas or pundits or whatever, and we have to be able to offer them our pitches now on Twitter, which I'm sure all of you are doing. And we have to look at what the producers of talk shows, like you see Conan up there, we have to look at what they're looking for and what they're tweeting about. And we noticed in this instance, the client's pretty obvious, that Conan had, I think it was the night before, right, Jeff? He had somebody on who was putting the strip on his nose, and we were able to respond to that in real time. FedEx the package over to Conan, who took this picture in his green room, you know, with the big, we didn't ask him to do that, but he posted that to his, you know, 2-3 million plus followers. And we wouldn't have necessarily known how that was all traveling if we weren't looking at all of the various modes by which producers and reporters are living online and off. And that's really, really key when we're trying to figure things out. Another really quick example: news leaked out last week, unfortunately for us, because it's not in store till June, that Nestle for the first time is able to come out with Girl Scout cookie bars with the top three Girl Scout flavors. And one of the things that we're doing, engaging online, is to find members of Girl Scouts who are members of the media. There's that automatic sense of pride and awe of being a Girl Scout that we, you know, we want to feed off of and literally supply them with candy bars. So you should see the tweets that we're getting from, you know, anywhere from Ladies Home Journal to Us Weekly to People Magazine, from these reporters who we're finding. They're like, "I'm a Girl Scout. I can't believe you're tweeting this to me, because we're trying to find out through tweets that they have in the past if they're Girl Scouts or not." It's the 100th anniversary, so a lot of Girl Scouts are tweeting about it. So this was really, really helpful to us, a moment in time, something we seized on and ended up kind of getting the word out 3 months before it's in store.
So we've talked about product marketing for a bit here. You both work for companies that have, in some cases, targets on your backs. How do you use real-time marketing to manage issues?
I'm letting Rick handle that one. I'll talk about building relationships in a minute.
We've got critics out there. You know, every company does. And so what we've been able to do is put together different processes to, you know, starting with monitoring, but then also processes behind the monitoring to help us react to things very, very quickly. You know, and over that time, what we found is that when dealing with critics that are out there, there are certain things that you can engage on and you should engage on, and there are certain things that you can't. You know, there are people who don't like McDonald's, you know, for whatever reason. And talking about, there's choices. Everyone has choices to make. As a marketer, I have a choice of how and where I spend my budget and how and where I spend my time. And so given a choice, I'd rather spend my money on fans and keeping my fans and customers happy and customer service rather than wasting a whole lot of time trying to convince someone who probably doesn't want to ever be a McDonald's customer.
Absolutely. I think just to build on that, there are people, and particularly online, they have even more access to us now, that are just trying to create controversy. They're not trying to solve anything. And so I think just coaching our people to avoid those discussions. If they're just out to create controversy, how is this actually going to move anything forward? But if there are goals around, you know, working with us to solve something together, we absolutely entertain that. And I think that the other piece is we tend to work through our partners on a lot of this, because getting a third party to sort of disarm or diffuse the situation can be incredible. For example, we actually have a partnership we announced last year with the Nature Conservancy. So every time we build a new manufacturing plant, they are our partners in determining what we have to do to actually offset and put back into nature anything that we took out of nature. And they are the ones that determine that, not us. And so actually having them as the partner in talking about this is much more credible than us talking about it ourselves.
What about lead generation and sales? I know, Rick, obviously it's easier potentially for you when you're selling products at mass that are lower cost. How do you see the impact of this in driving people literally into stores to buy the Shamrock Shake?
In a couple of ways. We've done some experiments when we're testing products in local markets. A lot of our local markets will have a localized Twitter or Facebook presence. And so we'll use those tools to push out messaging around, hey, you know, there's a new product in your area. You can be the first to try this. Let us know what you think. And if you like it, buy a lot, because otherwise the test won't succeed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So each of you are pushing real-time marketing forward inside of your organizations, and I thought we'd talk a little bit about what everybody in this audience should think about in terms of requirements. What do they need to do this inside of their own organizations today? And as we're putting together these slides, we came up with five different things that we thought are absolutely critical in this. Let's start with the people aspect. You guys want to talk about who you're involving, how you recruit them, those kinds of things?
Most of my emphasis is actually on the people. I feel like we have reasonably solid processes and tools. We're a company of engineers, so we're really good at that. So we kind of got that down first. The harder part is identifying the right people. And I don't know how many of us in here are marketers, PR people. Wow. Okay. Well, great. So I actually, within my company, am leading a little bit of a revolution to have the marketers and the PR people act as community managers, but not be the ones as the main emphasis of the, you know, having the conversations online. We're the ones that should be identifying the opportunities and feeding those to the people who actually want to hear from. So in our example, that's our scientists. Our scientists are naturally curious. They're really passionate about what they do. And so unlocking them and unleashing them on the world is really the magic behind what we should be doing from a relationship building and a real-time marketing perspective. So we're really trying to get the marketers off Twitter, because people don't really want to hear the canned messages and the spin. They want to hear from our scientists themselves. And so I'm trying to get the marketers transitioned into being community managers and getting the scientists really, you know, active in this space. And they are so excited to finally get to be front and center. I don't know. A lot of people don't think science is a very sexy career. I don't know. The people in our lab coats are the most fascinating people in our company. And so getting them front and center, those are the people who people want to hear from.
And I mean, in your case, these scientists are often the people who do sit in labs. They may not be communicators naturally. Can you talk about what you've had to do to make them feel comfortable to participate?
Right. They actually need a lot less training than we thought. Imagine that. They're really good at what they do, and they're really articulate. It was just a matter of, we actually have a four session training process where it's more getting them familiar and comfortable with finding their own voice. And what's the best things for them to talk about? What are the things for them to avoid engaging on? So it's really just coaching them and getting them comfortable. And we do it once a week for 4 weeks before we actually unleash them on the world, because we want them to have time to practice in between each session they have with us. And then after that, they can come back to us and get advice as to how to do this. I think that the biggest challenge we have is right now our focus is about 50 of our top scientists at all levels of our organization and getting them really actively participating. I think we have the team right now that can handle 50. Scaling this to 500 is something we want to do, but it's a huge challenge in terms of managing that. And then we'd eventually like to figure out how do the 5,000 professional employees have a role and a voice in all of this. I don't think we'll eventually go to our full 50,000, but we would like to get it from 50 to 500 to 5,000 as quickly as we can over the course of the next year. We have great stories to tell, and we've been hiding them for way too long.
Some of the things that I think are essential are, number one, you got to make buddies with your folks in legal. buy them pizza, take them out for beer, whatever you got to do. Because, I mean, honestly, I've been able to move things at McDonald's only with the help of legal. I mean, a lot of organizations are like that, but it's been particularly, pointed in my organization. And what I've done is we've got kind of a two-stage process. They need to review a lot of the plans and creative and messaging that goes out. But in a lot of organizations, the marketers hold that until it's completely done, then you throw it over the wall to legal and hope that it comes back with minimal changes. I've actually kind of changed that process around where I sat down the first week of January and walked legal through our entire year's plan, knowing full well that there's things, especially in the third and fourth quarter, that we're not there yet. They're not comfortable with going there yet. But I said, look, these things we're going to do the first and second quarter are going to set the stage for us to be able to do this. So, you know, my job is to push us as an organization to do this. Your job is to make sure that we're taking smart risks, but we got to partner up to get this done. Another thing that's very important is developing your champions, the folks at the top level who will support you. One way that I've found to do this is we've done a series of Twitter chats with some of our senior leadership at McDonald's. We had the president of the U.S. business, our chief marketing officer, our heads of sustainability, also going on Twitter chats. Now, the goal of those chats, obviously, is to connect our customers to the senior leaders in the organization so that they can ask questions. You know, anything you want to know about McDonald's, ask our president, Jan Fields. My objective with that was to get those senior leaders exposed to Twitter, because they all have Twitter accounts, but they may not necessarily be as active given the stress and demands of their business job. So getting them to sit down on Twitter for an hour and see the raw, unedited conversations that are happening, both good and bad, really has been eye-opening for them and has helped bring them to a place where they're providing a lot more support to the notion of social media and responding to customers in real time than ever before. And then the third thing that is absolutely essential is you always have to have contingency plans. You always need to have backup plans. Because you put a story out there, you don't really know how your customers are going to react. You know, you've done research and you're going to take, you know, you hope you know how folks are going to react, but it can always change on you. We had an issue that happened to us a couple months ago, where there was we had a hashtag out there, MCD Stories, and so we put it out there. It started going the wrong way. It wasn't what we wanted to. We were able to change that within 90 minutes. Now, what happened was, conversations about MCD Stories spiked up. We changed it. They spiked back down. We got 2,000 tweets in that day. A lot of negative. Obviously, we're not happy about that. But because we were able to move quickly and we had a contingency plan in place, that was only 2% of the conversation of that entire day about McDonald's, and less than 1% of the conversation that week. So yeah, there was a lot of hype about the negativity there, and that obviously it's not something that we want, but we were able to move quickly and change that conversation before it became something that was completely out of control and horribly detrimental. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Rick, in your case, the mention about the legal team and getting them involved, I know in the example we used on this previous slide with the infographic and analyzing the stuff, I mean, this happened in a series of hours. Mm-hmm. How do you set expectations with counterparts that maybe are outside of marketing about how fast they have to move? Because in this case, you got legal approval in an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really just a matter of giving them the heads up that, you know, there are going to be times when there's something that we're going to look like we're coming at you really, really fast, because that's the nature of the game. And so just setting that expectation that something might pop up, and then we'll ask that you can help us when those things pop up, because they're going to.
Yeah,
and you're right, Rick. I mean, you have to just keep dripping on them. Yeah. I feel like I go with a lot of case studies. I'm sort of stand outside their door with a cup of coffee, or in your case, like you said, maybe take them out for a beer, but continually dripping on them throughout the year so that you're not just coming to them when you need them, because everyone's doing that. Mm-hmm. But making sure they have a full understanding, you know, that in the way that we operate today, things come and go in 48 hours. So I can't have a 48-hour routing time mm-hmm. on a message that I'm putting out. We're just going to completely miss that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think after 3 or 4 times of hearing that, it really sinks in for them.
Yep. Each of you has talked about involving pretty diverse groups of people inside of your company in these efforts and providing training for them. Jim, in your case, you know, you manage a team of media relations folks who are on the phone pitching stories or sending emails all day long to journalists, and they've done it one way for a long time. How do you train them to act differently?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's an ongoing challenge. It seems like folks are so used to being at their desk, right? And while they're interacting with social media at their desk, I think bringing people together and collaborating on ideas and even throwing a pitch idea off of somebody who has a very different perspective than you, working with more creative types, more strategic people, and coming up with ideas and doing it together. Even if you just take a half an hour a day to get up from your desk, not saying you have to go into a fancy center like we have at Golan Harris called The Bridge, but go somewhere where you can interact and bounce ideas off of each other, and you'd be amazed at what happens. That something that you've been trying to think of for a couple of days just comes naturally in conversation. Mm-hmm. And just one note on the people part of it too, in keeping with this theme, don't be afraid to hire someone out of PR. Particularly a really good writer, journalist, or a producer of a morning show, because they'll come at this real-time marketing perspective from, being in the news. Somebody from CNN would be a really great hire because they're used to jumping on something that happens, and we need that mindset on the PR side and the marketing side. And I think we're getting there, but we could be doing a lot better.
Jim, you were talking about making sure there's time in the day for people to sit down and sort of understand what's happening around them and think creatively about new ways to leverage what's happening around them. How do you engineer that into the PR process? You look at the way PR has always worked, and it's a lot of people that come in with press releases and a call sheet in the morning, and they smile and dial all day long. Mm-hmm. How do you engineer that into a day's work?
You have to create an environment where there are actual televisions. People can actually watch what's happening. I'm amazed at just a simple thing like watching The View, Hot Topics, for 10 minutes and looking at the conversations that are happening online while Whoopi Goldberg or Barbara, whoever, is saying something completely batty or off the wall. You can track what people are saying, and you then know that there's other worlds beyond just what's happening at ABC. There's worlds of people talking about what's happening, and create an environment where there's a place for you to put ideas up. I'm sure some of you have this at your company, but a place where you can sit and relax, where you're not necessarily in front of a tight little cube environment. I mean, it helps alleviate the sort of boring, press release generating kind of mentality. To have to be in a vibrant environment where you're looking at TV, Twitter, Facebook, and you have it all sort of in front of you, and you're seeing this all happen in front of your eyes. It's just a really cool thing.
So for companies that just want to get started, impart some advice. Where do you start? If you had to do three things today, just getting started, knowing what you know now, what would those three things be?
Well, I would say definitely, and this is for companies, but more for individuals, is practice your writing. So much of what's put out there is just it's repurposed material that yeah, it's the right message, but it's the wrong tone, it's the wrong voice for that particular media. So that's why I actually try to spend time every day just thinking about how I'm writing, even though most of what I put out there now is usually in tweet form. I still look at that's writing is a muscle that you have to exercise, and you have to keep that muscle in shape. And so never get away from that. Also evolve your voice. Who we are online as a company right now and in our interactions with customers is different from what it was 2 years ago. And I know it's going to change. That's partially because of our customers, too. How they communicate with us online has evolved and will continue to move along with that. And then the third thing is really to focus on your fans. Because, again, you've got limited time and limited budget. So focus on the folks that are going to matter for your organization.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing for us, and this is both getting our C-suite comfortable with this as well as the people who are going to be doing this day to day, is we're human and it's okay to be flawed. And people expect us to be, and that's okay. I mean, you shouldn't go out there with the idea that you can be reckless. but it's okay to make mistakes here and there, and that people are going to know that, you know, you as a human being are going to naturally do that. I think the hardest audience to get comfortable with that is our C-suite. I think in so many cases we've been so overly produced and heavily engineered in the way we do communication that people expect perfection. And right now we're in a spot where speed beats perfection nearly every time. And so I think that we're really trying to coach people on what that means. So don't be reckless, but it's okay to show your flaws at times. It really makes you human. And from a content sharing piece, I think sort of building off of what Rick already said, we really focus the people that are going to be speaking on behalf of our company to share, to use the 80-20 rule around the content they're sharing. Don't share more than 20% of news articles about our company. That's just not that exciting to people, aside from us. So really keep 80% of it about what you're passionate about, and hopefully that is your job, and hopefully that is things that have to do with what you're doing. But don't just share news articles about our company. That's not all that engaging or exciting for anyone. They can read that on our official channel and move on.
Sure. So real quick on my end, try this for one day. Cross off everything on your to-do list, every single thing. Cancel every meeting that you have and only come up with ideas, whether you're marketing or PR, doesn't matter, based on what you see in the news. Only come up with insights and ideas based on news online and offline. What was on that TV show, what was in that tweet, and, you know, you can have a list of the clients you work for or your initiatives in front of you. That's okay. But how do you match what's in the news cycle that day to what you're supposed to be working on? You'll see some magic happen there. Be authentic. Be honest. Not overly boastful. If you're going to get the media to trust you, you have to entertain and inform at the same time, and that's a pretty tough bridge to cross. And at the end of the day, you've got to be fearless, aggressive, and take no prisoners every single day when you're competing against so much media that people are consuming.
So we want to leave a few minutes for questions. If anybody has questions, step on up. Go ahead.
Oh, you've got to go to the mic.
First of all, great panel, so thank you very much. You guys gave a lot of great examples about big brands and leader brands. I work for a brand that's relatively unknown in a category that's relatively unknown. So how do the principles of real-time marketing change, or do they change at all? And do you have any advice for brands that are a little bit smaller who don't have as much clout as bigger brands do?
Good question. From a research perspective, what we found in our research is that in some cases, you're at an advantage because there is an element of surprise in it. And if you act fast enough, oftentimes you can draft some of the things that are in the news that may even be driven by the bigger companies normally you wouldn't be able to fight at that level. But if you move fast enough, oftentimes you can get your brand involved in these conversations just by virtue of being there first or fastest.
Yeah, and I think we're a big brand, but we're not well-known in most circles. And I think a lot of big brands fall into the trap of trying to be everything to everyone, and that's never been our goal. So I think the advantage for us, and maybe some advice for you, is, you know, you can be incredibly relevant and incredibly focused, and to Jeff's point, in a very nimble way. You know, you don't have to ask permission of a lot of people to go do things. So, you know, building on what Jim was saying, if you can be of the moment and be very, very relevant and focused to the topic at hand, I think it's a huge advantage, actually, to a lot of big brands. You know, there's so much pressure to be everything to everyone that it's actually more of a challenge in many cases.
What type of company is it?
I work for HomeAway. We're a vacation rental marketplace.
Okay. Do you have someone, an expert that you work with or an executive that can talk to summer vacation trends?
Yeah. Our CEO is actually a really great guy. And really
you would be shocked if you could come up with compelling story angles about summer vacation trends, and you do a little research and see the types of people that get quoted doing that. There's a couple go-tos, right? Who, like Peter Greenberg, who goes on Today Show, but there's a whole space of reporters that are looking to write about summer vacation right now, and you'd be shocked at how many would take your expert if the content is really good.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. Annetta Hall from Pitney Bowes. I have a question for Rick, and it's kind of a follow-up on the on the legal question, on the legal statement that you made, that working with your legal department often. And you mentioned that you review your marketing plans with your legal department at the beginning of the year and walk them through the whole thing. And I'm just wondering, because we're talking about agile marketing, and obviously the plans continue to change. How do you, you know, how often do you come back to them? Because in many cases, you need their legal advice right then and there.
Sure. Yeah. And the review at the beginning of the year is to lay out a roadmap in terms of here's what we want to do, here's the directions that we want to go in, and then there are other specific reviews for programs as they roll out. And so, like, probably every day we're sending something, you know, there's something in the process of going through a legal review, but it might be for something that's not going to hit for another 2 months, or it might be for something that needs to be looked at the same day.
So you have developed kind of like SLAs with you that they're responsible for getting back to you within a certain period of time?
Yeah. There's even a website to send the stuff to legal so they can queue it up, and they've got tickets to track things.
Thank you.
Sounds like fun.
Hi, I just had a question as to how you are using Facebook in real-time marketing and whether you foresee your use of that changing at all, given the changes they're making in the use of the platform for promoted tweets and other ways of reaching out to your fan base.
Yeah, certainly you can take insights now and create better ad units now based on what your fans may be talking about. One of the ways that a lot of our teams are using it today, they will spot what their customers maybe talking about in a lot of different channels. Maybe it's Facebook, but it could be Twitter, it could be blogs, it could be lots of different things. And that influences what the content may be that's posted by the brand in some of those shared vehicles. So, for example, we have a team of people in Chicago that run the wall for Unilever's Klondike bar brand. And it's awfully hard to create interesting content around a little ice cream sandwich. But what the team often does is they look at what their fans may be talking about elsewhere and then figure out how a way to sort of draft those topics into what they're creating for the wall on Facebook that's coming from the brand. So if an example of this, there was a huge snowstorm a month ago or whatever that blanketed the West Coast and it moved across the East Coast. And what do people do when there's a big snowstorm? They get on Facebook and complain about shoveling. So the team spotted all of these conversations about that and started to create content around a snowstorm and why you should eat ice cream in a snowstorm and things like that that people engaged with right away because they were already talking about some of those topics. So I think content creation is and how you topically what you can cover is one real opportunity for it.
And just one other point I'd tag on to there is that what we've seen is our fans on Facebook and our followers on Twitter, there's overlap, but they're very different audiences, and they want to engage with us around very different topics. And so making sure that we're being smart about how we drive conversations in those two different places is something that's very key to our strategy.
Yeah, our customers are not on Facebook. They don't want to engage with us on Facebook if they are. But what they do want is us to create science content to convince their kids to go into science careers. So we actually are working quite a bit in the STEM education field. And unfortunately for us, we have to compete with people like Microsoft, Boeing, Google, who, I don't know, they argue that they have cooler careers for engineers and scientists than we do. I have issue with that, but I think that we have some really... So we're trying to get people to go into scientific careers, and Facebook is a great way to convince children that it's an amazing place to consider a career.
Hey, Abby, I'm Dave Thomas. I run the community team at Radian 6, and when you just said... We know that our customers want us to create science content to convince their kids to go into science. How do you know that? Because that's great, and we're always trying to make sure that we know exactly what our audience wants to hear from us. Mm-hmm. Do you survey them? Is that how did you come to that conclusion?
We ask them, but we also – so we have great relationships with our customers, or we are with them every single day. So we ask them some of their biggest challenges, and then we're involved in a lot of the industry discussions around STEM education in general, so topically, so not in a self-serving way, but really trying to create a market around STEM education in general, which is science, technology, engineering, and math, for those of you that aren't familiar with the acronym. And really trying to, right now there's over a million sort of jobs available in this space, and we have less than 200,000 people equipped to take on these roles. So at a time where unemployment's 9%, that's a pretty interesting sort of statistic to look at and understand why. And so we tend to engage on that topic at a macro level, but then we've also done some more studying using Radiant 6 and other tools to identify what people are talking about and also where the gaps in conversation exist. And there aren't a lot of conversations going on around chemistry. Everyone wants to go into computer science or, you know, digital graphics and things like this, but not around chemistry.
Hi, I have a question about Twitter and Facebook. So I think you just mentioned that you engage very differently with those folks. My clients, I think, engage very much the same way across all platforms. So can you talk a little bit about what you're doing or how you're approaching those two platforms differently?
Sure. Well, again, a lot of what's happened has been evolving over time, over the past couple of years that we've been on these tools. We found that on Twitter, our audience, they're there because they want to have conversations with us. They ask us a ton of questions. The customer service aspect is definitely part of it. On Facebook, people join because they wanted to be a fan of McDonald's. I think honestly that there's something, if you like a brand, there's something fun about being a fan of theirs on Facebook. So then you get more updates from them. People looking for coupons. People want to be entertained on Facebook too. The number of people who watch our commercial videos on Facebook always astounds me. It's like we all got DVR, so we don't have to watch commercials anymore. But then we post commercials on Facebook and they get liked 10,000 times and watched 40,000 times in a week. And so it's just, you know, setting up the tools. And yes, we started off with an approach where we had a lot of the same content in the same places, but then we realized people were using it in different ways, and so we just evolved those different strategies, looking at them as different channels over time, and we'll continue to do so as well.
I think we're out of time. Thanks everybody for coming.